Okay. So, we will begin. The truth is that, yes, the topic of Avraham Avinu is a subject that can be developed. We can go a year still on that same subject. Last week, I actually rushed at the end. I don't think that I developed some of the points properly. So, as we discussed last week, basically, and here I'm just going to be loyal to the title that was advertised. As we discussed last week, Avraham Avinu's career was trying to figure out why is there a creation. He figured out that it can't be haphazard. It can't just be. The concept of God in those days was a bunch of different gods, each with its own property, each with its own powers, each just fending for itself, fighting with people, getting along with people. God was basically just another type of being that you had to interact with. But there was no plan and purpose to the world as a whole, there was no uniformity, and no creator. I don't know what they believed in terms of a creator. Now, Avraham Avinu basically reached the decision that can't be. The rest of his life was a career of trying to, A, understand who this creator is as best as he can, B, what could this creator's purpose possibly have been in creating the world? Here I'm summing up. I'm going to spend the next minute and a half. We'll be summing up what we discussed last week. His conclusions were, in a broad way, that if there is a creator, and yet he kept himself hidden, apparently it's our job to discover him and bring out his existence, and therefore he dedicated his life to career number one. He had two primary careers. Dedicated his life to publicizing the name of Hashem. Whenever it says in the Torah that he built a mizbeach and called out in the name of Hashem, that's what he was doing. He was preaching. Number two was that apparently the primary value that this creator has is kindliness, because that is the most prevalent phenomenon in this world. Many of us might wonder if that's so. But that's only because we've been drowning in kindliness from the day that we're born. By us, kindliness means, at a stroke of good fortune, you make $50,000 where you didn't expect it. That's kindliness. Everything else is basically boring life and problems here and there. So life is mostly problems with strokes of good luck every so often. So it's hard for us to hear that the most prevalent phenomenon in the world is kindliness. But as we said last week, the greatness of Avraham Avinu was the capability of noticing everything that we feel natural about. He started realizing that eyes, nose, mouth, all of the body, all the phenomena of the creation, the rain system, etc., etc., all these are things that nobody had to do for us and yet did for us. And therefore, once you start thinking of it in these terms, you do come to the realization that the world is just throwing out the figures, 95% kindliness and 5% problems, or however else you figure it out, but it's in that range. Therefore, having concluded that this creator, what does this creator want? I don't know. But when I see what he considers a value, I see what he considers good, that's what I'm going to do, because that's probably the way to please him. Okay, now we want to continue this. What do we come away with from this whole story of Avraham Avinu? What are we taking home? What legacy did he leave us? See, he did the job. We can't discover anymore, because he already discovered. We can't wonder about the mystery of the existence. Why do we exist? Because we know. The answer was handed to us on a silver platter. Yeah? We should keep his life's endeavor alive, but by us it's working backwards. Yes, we know that Hashem created the world. We know everything Avraham discovered. But, yet, it's up to us to discover Hashem. It's up to us to discover Hashem because when you're told, Hashem exists, and now here's what you have to do with it. It's very different than actually learning to really really sense and appreciate and discover Hashem in a real way. Did I talk about Haram last week? Avram's brother threw himself into the fire? No. So here I just want to bring out this point. Avram Avinu, we know that he was arrested by Nimrod. Nimrod had that big showdown in which Nimrod basically told Avram Avinu they lit a fiery furnace. The fiery furnace in itself, again, we just hear the story in a theoretical way. He was thrown into the furnace. Seeing that furnace was enough to strike dread in a person's heart. The way they made those furnaces, as we know from Nebuchadnezzar, Torah doesn't describe the furnace that Nimrod prepared. But we know from Nebuchadnezzar that those furnaces were such that you felt the heat in a big distance around it. Right? A person didn't have to be thrown into the furnace to already be able to appreciate the torture involved. They brought him 50 feet away from the furnace, was already enough to experience what it means to burn alive. So, it's mind-boggling. And this is the furnace of Nimrod had this prepared, and he's telling Avram Avinu. And people had seen it done. It was a regular practice in Nimrod's time. It was a big mitzvah to throw your child into the furnace, l'chvod Nimrod. I don't know what it earned you exactly, but that was a big mitzvah. And people were familiar with the concept of watching a person get tossed in and becoming burnt to a crisp. Screams for a couple of minutes, and then, probably not a couple of minutes even, and then that's that. Horrific scene. Now Avraham Avinu knew what it involved. And Nimrod tells him, okay, here's your choice. And Avraham Avinu is willing to be thrown in. Now, the Maisa, Avraham Avinu's whole family was suspect of having his heretical views of, you know, disputing the authoritative concept of disputing the church. And therefore, yes, they were going to ask Haran afterwards, where are you on all this? Haran is standing and watching the whole thing. And we know, Chazal tell us, what did he think? Well, let's see what happens. Avram wins, I'm with him. Nimrod wins, I'm with him. So we take that, naturally. I mean, as a kid, the 5-year-old understanding is that Haran was a fake. He was an insincere guy. He figured, I'm going to go with the winning team. I don't know who to go for in the World Series. You wait till after whoever wins, and then you root for them. But when you think about it from a mature perspective, I don't think that that's what happened there. It's very likely that Haran was a sincere person. Let's keep in mind, if Avraham Avinu influenced people all around, he didn't have any influence on his own family. Haran probably heard Avraham Avinu's teachings. Haran probably wondered. And when it actually came down to it, Haran said, this is a good opportunity for me to really discover the truth. We don't have to say that he was insincere. He wanted to know what the truth was. And when he saw that Avraham Avinu came out okay, if that's the truth, I'm ready to go with it too, in a sincere way. He was thrown into the fire and he was burnt to a crisp. Now, according to the way I just presented it, the ending doesn't end right, right? The ending goes awry. But does it really? There were plenty of martyrs over the generation who gave their lives and did not come out. All the stories of the Inquisition have the happy ending. Thousands of people were burnt at the stake and came out unscathed. There were plenty of martyrs throughout history that, yes, they went intending to be martyrs and they merited to be martyrs. That was their happy ending. Rabbi Akiva, right? That was their happy ending. Tragic. But for them, it was their happy ending. And that's what happened to Haran. We have no reason to assume that he was any less of plenty of the martyrs in later generations who gave up their lives. But if so, we still have to wonder, at the end of the day, why did the nace happen to Avraham Avinu and not to Haran? And here's where I want to get to our point now. There was a fundamental difference between Avraham Avinu and Haran. Both of them threw themselves into the furnace with the understanding that this is true, Hashem is true, and one should give up his life for Hashem. But the difference was that for Avraham Avinu, this was the culmination of passion that he was developing. We don't know exactly what age it was. If we would assume that it was a little before they left before Avraham got his first prophecy, was about the age of 70. So this was the culmination of more than 60 years of developing appreciation of Hashem and passion for Hashem, and he put all that into this action, throwing himself into the fiery furnace. For him, this was the peak of the last 67 years, assuming he was 70. This was the peak of 67 years of the leading up to this moment. I've been dedicating my life to sanctifying Hashem's name, and this is the peak of it. He went in dense with feelings, full of feeling. He went in besimcha. Now Haran went in because he knew it's the right thing to do, but that's all. Now he knew that it's the right thing. He was probably inspired too. But he knew that it's the right thing to do. He didn't have a fraction of the feeling that Avraham Avinu had at the time. And now the question is, the truth is, every Jew, I believe, surely every observant Jew, we're so ingrained, we have so deep in our genes the concept of giving up our lives Al Kiddush Hashem, were it to come down to it. I think that all of us would be able to do it without a problem. That's what I believe. It would come down to it, we'd be able to do it. We shouldn't be tested, but we should be prepared. So it says, Chazal tell us, when you say, Bechol Nafshecha, a person should actually be thinking in his mind, trying to be developing the resolve, I am willing to give up my life for Hashem. So Rav Shach used to go to the sea every so often. He didn't go swimming, but they used to take him to the sea. They would put the chair, like a little bit in the water, and he would sit in the water. He would sit on the chair with his feet in the water. That was how he would relax. So that one time he was there, and he wouldn't talk to anybody. He would just kind of relax. But he was staring out at the sea. Staring out at the sea is inspiring. It's inspiring. You see the vastness of it. And he was getting more and more inspired, until suddenly he exclaimed to everybody around him, if Hashem would tell me to throw myself in right now, I'd do it. He just got full of inspiration. Now, yet the question is, we're seeing, at least the way I'm understanding it, that there's such a thing as, yes, giving up his life Al Kiddush Hashem. And that's a very great thing. But there can still be very many different levels of doing that. Now, we're not giving up our lives Al Kiddush Hashem. We hope. Well, we wait to see what Hashem has in mind, but that's not on our agenda right now, right? That's not how we're planning our spiritual progress in life. But yet, the point of this is, developing the resolve to give up your life Al Kiddush Hashem is not just so that when you face the situation, you should be able to do it. The point is that you should be living with this resolve of dedication to Hashem all the time. So what happens? A person says, okay, I have the resolve. But if Hashem doesn't actually ask me to give up my life, it'll never be expressed. No, if you have that resolve, express it in everything you do. Express it in all the mitzvahs you do. So here is where we're really coming to the point of, we have to start working backwards now. Let's not just go through lives. Okay, we got the information from Avraham Avinu. He spent his time making himself meshuggah. He figured it all out. Now we have it on a silver platter. We know what Hashem is. We know what he wants. Now let's go ahead and do what he wants. No. The point is to try to follow Avraham Avinu in the sense of developing all the feeling and understanding that he was full of. Developing all the appreciation of Hashem, developing all that passion for Hashem. We work backwards. He started not knowing anything, learning. We have the answer. Now we have to work backwards and develop all the feeling that brought him to his realizations. So this is number one. What are we coming away from the legacy of Avraham Avinu with? To try to start developing all that feeling that he had. To be able to say that anything that we do for Hashem is not just because, well, we know that there's Hashem, we know that this is what he wants, and we're doing it, but the same way Avraham Avinu did it. Anything we do for Hashem is a way to channel all of our feeling and appreciation of Hashem. That's what the Chovos HaLevavos says. Really, that's what the mitzvahs are. Mitzvahs are means of expressing our appreciation and our feeling for Hashem. If so, we have to work backwards and start developing that appreciation. First, we have to start learning to sense Hashem. To sense Hashem. There's a shar in Chovetz Halvavos, one of the most fundamental textbooks of Jewish living. I generally categorize it as a Musa Sefer. But it's not a Musa Sefer. Reb Chaim Brisker said that Chovetz Halvavos is a Halacha Sefer. Hilchas being a Jew. That's what he said. So, Chovetz Halvavos, one of the first sections in the Sefer is Shara Bechina. It's called the Shara of Observing. Learning to observe Hashem. And there he goes to show at length the different parts of the body, the different phenomena in nature. And in a superficial way, a person might think that the purpose of this Shara is to prove Hashem's existence. That's what the purpose is. And therefore, you might kind of feel that it's a bit of a waste of time. That's it, I already know. I don't need to be convinced. I want to move on. But the truth is that that's not the point of the Shara. The point of the Shara is to train us to sense Hashem. By showing how perfect your hand is, it's not just that he's showing, trying to tell you, oh, so do you see that there's Hashem? No, he's trying to train you to sense Hashem in your hand. Now, basically, the way I put it is, start to note things around you and to take them personally. Meaning, first of all, it's like we said last week, you have body parts, focus on one body part, appreciate how important it is to you, and really focus on the fact that Hashem did not have to give it to you, and that He decided He wants to grace you with it. Focus on that for 2 minutes. 2 minutes sounds like a small amount of time, but when you really try it, it's very long. Even 1 minute is a big accomplishment. Focus on 1 minute on some body part that you have. Try to picture life without it. Try to picture life without it. And then realize that Hashem decided He wants to spare you those problems. He granted you the perfect machine. I'll give an example of this. Evan Ezra, Rabbi Avraham Evan Ezra, was a very, very poor man. A very poor man. Never had mazel with Parnassah. In fact, he's the one who said, if I were to manufacture candles, night would stop falling. And if I were to manufacture tachrichim, shrouds, people would stop dying. Meaning, anything he tried in Parnassah didn't work. He had a very rough life. He traveled from place to place. At one point, he was in England. And he had a following of very wealthy Talmidim. He was a destitute person, had a following of very wealthy Talmidim, but on principle he didn't accept gifts. The Talmidim wanted to give him a gift. They didn't know how to do it. So they devised a plan. They knew that he took a certain path from his house to the Beis Medrash every day. And they decided that they're going to leave a pouch with gold coins right in his path. He'd trip over it. Right in his path. And they made sure there was no simon at all, that according to Halacha, 100% it's his. He found it, it's not a gift, that was their plan. Okay, but, again, if this was his mazel, what happened? He headed out that morning, and the Talmidim, some of them were hiding and watching to see what would happen. They wanted to see him find it. So he headed out that morning. He's walking down the path, and the Talmidim notice, to their amazement, their shock, he's walking with his eyes closed. And they're watching. He walks right past the pouch because he had his eyes closed. Walks right past the pouch, continues walking, and he trips over something. That's what will happen if you walk with your eyes closed. He tripped over something, fell down, got a bang, scratched himself, opened his eyes, gave a big smile, and then walked the rest of the way to shul with his eyes open. Then the Talmidim were in shock. They didn't understand what happened. They came over to him. They told him what they did. And they asked him, why were you going with your eyes closed? He said, Rabbi, he said, forget it. If this is my mazel, you're not going to beat it. The reason I was walking with my eyes closed, he said, it's because I woke up this morning thinking to myself, how much worse can it get? No parnasa. Struggling my whole life, bouncing around from place to place. And then it dawned upon me that it could be a lot worse. What happens if on top of everything else I didn't have eyes? He said I wanted to appreciate that. And therefore I decided I'm going to walk to shul with my eyes closed. Then I fell, and I said, one minute, I have a way out of this. I actually have a set of eyes that can spare me these feelings. I opened my eyes and I felt like a rich man. You want to appreciate some of these things, you try some of these things. Try keeping your hands behind your back for half an hour. Not using your hands at all. You'll suddenly discover how valuable your hands are. Now the point is to suddenly, when you start really figuring out what gifts these are and trying to picture the lives of people who don't have these things, who have systems that are failing, kidney failures, or how much a person would pay to have these organs, and then take personally the fact that you do have it, you think of it. One time, it's not going to make such an impact on you. But if you practice a minute a day thinking along these lines, it'll help. Then we'll take it a step further. Starting to really look around and take everything you see around you in a personal way. For example, you live in a working world. This is something that people have a hard time relating to as a personal favor. You wake up in the morning. Let's say you wake up from Vasikin. You wake up before dawn and the sun is coming up. The sun is coming up. Relate to that in a personal way. Meaning take it personally. Hashem is doing this right now consciously for me. When you see the sun coming up, we make a bracha every day. Yetzer Ar. When the sun comes down, we make Hamari Varovin. Because it's very important to all of us that the orbit continue properly. Just what? We don't relate to that in a personal way because, yeah, that's how the earth runs. But you wake up in the morning and you, when you see the sun coming up, you take it personally. You say, Hashem is doing this for me. He's bringing up a sun in order to provide me with a normal day. And you connect to Hashem. It's very hard to because he's doing it for billions of people. Why me? Well, let's give a mashal. Which is really the truth of how the perspective of these things is supposed to be. Think of a father walks by a playground, looks into the playground, there are 50 kids playing in the playground. Among those kids is his son, or two of his kids. He's watching from behind the fence, he's spying on them, doesn't want them to see. He's enjoying watching them. They're completely oblivious to his presence. And he decides, wants to do something. Goes to the store, buys a big bag of taffies. And he stands behind the fence. And he starts throwing taffies over into the park. Now there are 50 kids playing in the park. And it starts raining taffies. All the kids start collecting taffies. That's what you do if it rains taffies. Right? And then all of a sudden, one of his kids thinks, hey, that's my father's style. He turns around and he catches his father in the act. He says, I saw you, I know it was you. That was really why the father was doing it. Yeah, he was throwing taffies for 50 kids to have. Why? Because there was one kid of his there and he wanted him to chop. He wanted him to have a tap and he wanted him to chop. The kindliness that's being showered on this world in a very big way is being done in that way. It's being done for the person who's going to chop. Yes, Hashem is willing to support billions of, I don't know, billions, how many people are there in the world? Not billions, but 7 billion. Billions of Indians and Chinese and Africans and all the other chevra. Why? Because there are his kids there who are going to turn around and say, Hashem, we know you did that. We know you did it for me. This is the way to relate to every breakfast. Yes, you got bread along with billions of people. But I take it personally. I take it personally. I see Hashem there. When the sun comes up, I take it personally. Hashem is doing it for me. And when the sun comes down, think about that. That's one of the brachas that's a little difficult to relate to. Mariv HaRavim, what are we thanking Hashem for exactly? That's what you're thanking Hashem for. Hashem is making a functioning world for me. For me personally. It doesn't run automatically. We've already explained what Derech HaTeva is. We should repeat it. It's worth repeating. Derech HaTeva, people think, is a Shabbos clock. Nature runs by itself. And Hashem here and there interjects with different nisim or Ashkacha Pratis. Person missed the bus at the right time. That's when Hashem interjects, right? But the truth is that no. Derech HaTeva, where Rabbi Miller put it, the word nature is a word that has no meaning at all. It was really invented by the Greeks. The way the Kuzri puts it is what they call Teva, we call Hashem. Teva is Hashem. It's just as active. There's no Shabbos clock. There's nothing that runs on. Hashem doesn't set it up that way. It's Hashem at work. It's Hashem at work in a conscious way. If the sun is coming up, it's because Hashem is going like this. So when you see the sun coming up, say, Hashem, I know what you're doing right now. When you feel wind blowing against your face, Hashem, I know what you're doing right now, and you're doing it for me. What's the wind doing? The wind is preparing the atmosphere for the rain to be able to come at the right time in order for us to have food. Start relating to everything in that way. Even more than that. Even more than that. Things that seem the most simple and the most taken for granted are also things to note as personal favors from Hashem. You step outside of shul. Step outside of the house in the morning, you step onto solid ground, you didn't fall into the sea. That solid ground is there for you to have where to step, to have where to walk, to have where to be able to live. The atmosphere, as we discussed, is a small belt around the earth of atmosphere which is livable. And all the rest of the vastness of space, nowhere is livable. There's a tiny little belt around the earth that's livable. Hashem did that for you. Take it personally. When you step outside and have a breath of fresh air, Hashem put that there for me. It's like Mashal we've given other times. When you're a guest somewhere and you see that the host left all kinds of things around for your benefit, a chocolate here and a little nice thing there and all kinds of different personal touches, you feel warm every time you encounter one, right? You should feel like that. Feel that these are things that were left for you, Hashem. All these things are signed from Hashem with love. Then you really start experiencing Hashem. Hashem becomes an experience, a part of your life. That should lead to other things. That should lead to a feeling of want to do things for Hashem too. But that's really number one. We're working backwards. We know that there's Hashem. And now we're going to work backwards and try to really, really, really sense it and develop it and appreciate it as much as we possibly can. That's point number one that we should take home from Avraham Avinu. The next point to take home is the following. It's a mind-boggling point. The Alter of Kel makes this point. Avraham Avinu discovered Hashem when? At the age of 3. It says in Chazal that he discovered him at the age of 3, he discovered him at the age of 40. It says a few different ages that he discovered him. People superficially understand that it's a machloikis, but it's not really a machloikis. He was constantly enhancing his awareness of Hashem, his appreciation, and therefore, what he discovered now at the age of 20, everything else pales in comparison. He was busy discovering and discovering. But the Alter from Kelm says a very amazing point. You imagine that Avraham Avinu had no previous knowledge of Hashem. This was something that he conceived of. When did Hashem first appear to him and tell him, "You're right, it was me. You're on track"? When he was 75, he got his first nevuah. For 72 years, he dedicated his life to Hashem without getting one direct sign of recognition, of acknowledgement. And he suffered in those years. He was persecuted. Avraham Avinu, besides the story of the fiery furnace, that already we can consider a sign, but that also came later in life. Avraham Avinu spent 10 years in prison. Prison was torture. Prison in those days was a pit, probably wet. 10 years in prison. Think about it in realistic terms. A person discovers that there must be a creator who's interested in people, right, etc. I'm dedicating my life to him, I'm suffering on his behalf, and I'm never getting any acknowledgement. After a little bit of time, say, okay, I must have been wrong. I would have heard from him by now. I must have been wrong. Think of it. You daven for different things. You're told to daven for different things. You daven twice, three times. After 2 weeks, you lose your resolve. If Hashem didn't answer by now, he's probably not going to. Right? Either davening doesn't really help that much, or for whatever reason Hashem doesn't want to do it. But you lose your resolve after 2 weeks. Avraham Avinu should have lost his resolve after a couple of weeks, months, years also. But yet, Avraham Avinu kept with it. Avraham Avinu kept with it. Why did Hashem do that? Why did Hashem wait until he was 75 before actually appearing to him and telling him, yes, I'm the Hashem you've been seeking out. I'm the Hashem you've been trying to know for all these years. Why did he wait so long? Why couldn't he grant him that gratification earlier? And the answer is that on the contrary, Avraham Avinu was excelling even more and more and more and demonstrating even more and more and more faithfulness by being able to be steadfast in his conviction and not being worn out. Therefore, Hashem was saying, no, there's so much more potential, there's so much more greatness that Avraham Avinu can pull out. Why should I ruin it for him by appearing to him now, if he can become so much greater by deepening his conviction through his own powers, by himself? It's mind-boggling if you think about it, that a person is able to do that. A person reached a conviction, doesn't get any acknowledgement, and he's willing to weather the worst of storms for that conviction. This is really point number two, the idea of being steadfast. The idea of understanding that something is right and being able to just stick with it and not to be discouraged by the fact that I'm not getting recognition for it, that I don't seem to see any sign of divine favor. This is most relevant in tefillah, to be able to daven for something again and again and again and again with the realization that no, it's not that Hashem is ignoring you, and it's not that your tefillah isn't worth much, it's that Hashem wants to see, can we get even more resolve out of him? The truth is that this is really the approach we have to have to any talk about the Geula, right? Very, very hard to feel becoming discouraged. So many years we've been waiting for the Geula, we've been davening for the Geula. If it didn't happen by now, why should I think it's going to happen next week? There is that part of what Hashem wants is that we should long for the Geula with part of the effort that's going to bring it is to be able to maintain that fresh longing. Even though it's been so long, right, and it's been so schlepped out, but we still maintain that fresh longing no matter what's going on. So that's really point number two. The capability of being steadfast, the capability of being able to maintain your own inspiration by yourself, without having to depend on seeing it become gratified, seeing it become getting acknowledged. That's point number two. Okay, I'm going to skip point number three now because it's kind of included in point number two, and the truth is that I want to move on to another subject. So, now I want to talk about what I would have put as the topic what I had been planning on putting as this week's topic. There's something very interesting. Toldos is basically the parsha of Yitzchak Avinu. You note that the Yitzchak Avinu gets a much less attention in the Torah than the other of us, and it's a puzzling phenomenon. Avraham Avinu has parshias about him. Yaakov has parshias about him. Yitzchak Avinu comes up in the context of Avraham, but he has about a half a parsha dedicated to him only. And even in that parsha, it's hard to glean anything about his personality. You talk about certain things that happened to him, but you don't really see what he was about. Avraham Avinu, Yaakov, you see what they were about in the parshas that discuss them. Yitzchak, it's much harder to get a picture of. What was his greatness? Can anybody give me an example of something great about Yitzchak? We know that he was willing to go to the Akedah. Okay, fine. But other than that, we have a very hazy picture of who Yitzchak was. So, I just want to focus on one point now. that is that we're told that the midah of Yitzchak Avinu was pachad, right? Pachad Yitzchak, gevura, meaning. Whereas Avraham Avinu was much more of a focus of avas Hashem, chesed, etc., appreciating the chesed of Hashem. Yitzchak Avinu is what we call the midah of gevuras, pachad, yiras Hashem. And in our minds, it sounds like a positive aspect and a negative aspect. Right? There's a positive approach to Hashem and there's a negative approach to Hashem. And it's often easier to just focus on the positive. But the truth is that we have to realize, number one, if we're just going to go with this approach, Yitzchak Avinu is really the one who brought the discovery of Hashem to a new level. Meaning, what did he add to Avraham Avinu's Avodah? Avraham Avinu was the one who discovered the kindliness of Hashem, the existence of Hashem, the kindliness of Hashem, etc., etc., and therefore we should all want to dedicate our lives to him. Now Yitzchak Avinu came up with a new point, and that is that we had better dedicate our lives to him. It's not just that he's so kind, and it's so great, and it's nice to be involved with him, but that we have to fear him as well. Because there are consequences to not fearing him. Now this is something that has to be appreciated. Because Maral says, one of the Kinyanei Torah is Oyeves HaTeichochos. Well, if a person wants to really be successful in Torah, meaning really develop the Torah personality, you have to be an Oyeves HaTeichochos. A person has to love Teichochos. What does that mean? Most of my portion, the simple understanding of Oyeves HaTeichochos means that you're willing to accept Teichochos, you're willing to accept rebuke. And that's very fundamental. It's very important. You can't change unless you're willing to accept rebuke. But the Maral says that it means something else. The Maral says that Oyeves HaToichochos means you have to be able to love the element of Toichochos in the Torah. Meaning, the Torah has... There are a few dynamics involved in a relationship with Hashem. There's the dynamic of Hashem tells us, I'm going to take you as my nation. You're going to be my people for all of eternity. I'm going to give you eternal reward, etc. But there are also parshas in the Torah that talk about the consequences of not listening to Hashem. The dire consequences. That it's a very, very high stake game. And the Maral says, in order to really be a full-rounded Jew, if we'll put it that way, you have to be able to really appreciate that too. Torah is not just a fluffy thing of, we're all in it for the fun of it. There is something that you must conform to because there's no choice. There's no choice. Or if we'll put it this way, we have to realize that when we're being frum, when we're serving Hashem, we're not doing a favor to Hashem. We are mechuyev. We are mechuyev. We have to, whether we like it or not. Now, the way I'm putting it now sounds negative, and I'm actually going to take the negative a step further, but then we'll put it into perspective. It's very, very important to realize this, because otherwise there are a lot of phenomena in the world that can throw you. The Holocaust, for example. How could the Holocaust have happened? How could Hashem, who's good, have made a Holocaust? Okay, now here we just have to distinguish between people who have actually gone through it. When they ask the question, it's a different question. It's a question that we can't answer. But when we're talking lemaisa, on the philosophical level, if someone today is asking the question, how could Hashem have made a Holocaust? The answer is 1 minute. Do you realize that there are parshas in the Torah that describe this sort of thing? Right? There's a parsha of Bichul Koisa. There's a parsha of Kisavai. Talks about women eating the flesh of their children. Where were you before the Holocaust? You should ask, how could it say in the Parsha of Kisavai? Just what? Disregard these parshas. Nah, Hashem wouldn't really do that. And then when it happens, ooh, if there really is such a good Hashem, how could he have done it? Hashem told you beforehand that he's liable to do these sorts of things. You weren't willing to relate to that? That's your problem. But Hashem told you beforehand that yes, he's liable to do these sorts of things. And therefore, when these things do happen, we have to take them in the perspective of how our relationship with Hashem is supposed to look. Yes, there's that element too. But at the end of the day, we have to come back and put it into the right perspective. Because If so, what it appears is that there's two conflicting systems here. There's a system of reward and love, etc., etc., and then there's the system of fear and punishment, etc., etc. But it's not. Yitzchak Avinu was not adding a new element. Yitzchak Avinu was completing the picture that Avraham Avinu brought us. I'll put it into the perspective that Rav Shimshon Pinkus puts it. Rav Shimshon Pinkus says, it's a pasuk in the Torah that's a very, very depressing pasuk. After all the descriptions of the terrible teichochas, the terrible curses, all the horrors that are described there, the Torah finishes off and says, Gav kol choylim kol maka shol iksum v'basefer ha-Torah hazeh. Also, there will be even more problems, more horrors that are not described in this Torah. I'll bring them on you too. It's kind of like after everything described, it's not a very positive sounding pasuk. Rav Shimshon Pinkus said that actually, this was Rav Shimshon Pinkus able to turn the most depressing sounding things into the most beautiful. He said this pasuk is a most beautiful pasuk. What can be so beautiful about such a pasuk? So you know what Hashem is saying here? We have to realize what is the purpose of the punishments. And here we're just going to say it in general. This is really a subject that has to be developed further. What is the purpose of the punishments? The purpose of the punishments is, Hashem is saying, if you think that you can say to Hashem, well, I hear what you're offering me. You're offering me a relationship with you. You're offering me an eternal existence with you. But look, I prefer to live it up in this world. Okay? If Hashem were to say, all right, gesimta hate, that would be the worst tragedy of all. That would be the worst possible thing. Now Hashem is taking something of a risk. Hashem is putting us into this world in order to give us the opportunity of choosing to be with Him. But the prospect of a Klal Yisrael deciding not to means that Klal Yisrael is going to its ruination. And therefore Hashem says, I can't allow that to happen. For your good, since you might not properly appreciate what it means to have an eternal relationship with me, when you're here in this world, you might say, eh, you know what? I'll give up the billions of years of bliss. I'd rather have a couple of extra pizzas in this world. Hashem says, you don't realize quite what you're doing by deciding that, and therefore, I, as the responsible parent, have to make sure it doesn't happen. Right? What if a kid tells his parents, look, I appreciate your care and concern, but for me it is worth it to go into the street and get the ball. Right? And don't hold me back, it's not nice, my ball is about to pop, that would be a big tragedy in my life. I appreciate your concern, but this is the choice I want to make. The parent will say, I'll give you a spanking, but I won't let you do that. Right? Hashem says, your bond with me is the greatest thing. It's something that's too great to comprehend. Even if we do appreciate it, those of us who we don't begin to appreciate what that means. Hashem is Kol Yochol. Hashem says, I'm creating an entity called the Jewish people who are going to be the recipients of the greatest good I can possibly give. And while they're in their physical state, in which they're completely oblivious to all that means, they might come and say, it's okay. Right? It's like a person is saying, I'd rather a minute of happiness than a million years of happiness. I can't let that happen. My bond with you is not something that I'm going to let go. And therefore Hashem says, it's not going to be a situation that, look, I'll try once, twice, and if it doesn't work, I'll let go. Go, gesundheit. No, Hashem says, I'll do everything it takes. If it needs to get worse than all the horrors we described, I'll do that too. The Jewish people will never manage to have a peaceful existence outside of the realm of my service. Why? Because that would be the worst possible thing I could do to them. And therefore it's all really under the umbrella of Hashem's love. It's all really under the umbrella of Hashem's love. The fact that Hashem says, there is no way you will be able to depart from me. Hashem is saying, in other words, your eternal good is too precious for me to allow you to squander away. My relationship with you is too precious to me for me to allow you to just go off. And therefore, yes, There are going to be terrible curses. There will be terrible suffering. If that's what it takes for me to ensure that the Jewish people will stay on the right track. Now, yes, there will be individuals who will go lost. But this whole system of the Teichachas is actually set up as a means of keeping Klal Yisrael in place. That's really what it's all about. Now, therefore, when we talk about pachad, this is kind of what I actually said today in the shiur. When we talk about pachad, the pachad that Yitzchak Avinu introduced, we have to take that in the right perspective. When people hear about Gehenna, when people hear about divine punishment, and they feel like it's up to me to fend for myself against Hashem, Hashem is waiting to see, to catch me if I do something wrong. It's kind of like, you know, I got the teacher against the class. The teacher's looking out for the slip in order to bang the kid over the head. Hashem is looking out to see if he can catch me doing something wrong, and then I'm dead. And therefore, Rachmana Litzlan, we see things like OCD in areas of halacha. People are worried, you know. You see people getting into these panicked states of, maybe I'm not doing it right, and then I heard about Gehenna, right? It's mamish, completely. It's not just not understanding who Hashem is, it's not understanding what the nature of Hashem's punishments are. And this is basically the mashal we gave at the beginning of the shiur. We have to put it into this context also. It's not you against Hashem. It's not that Hashem is kind of waiting on the side with his arms folding and saying, alright, are you going to make it? Or are you not? And then who? I'm going to give it to you. It's the threat, again, of a parent. You are in your parent's house. Your parent is not going to let you out of the house. If you're going to try to get out, you're going to try to misbehave, you're going to try to mess yourself up, the parent might beat you. Right? But it's a very different type of fear. It's a very different type of fear. You know that the whole purpose of the threat and the punishment is just because Hashem wants to maintain a proper working relationship with you. And on the contrary, Hashem wants you to succeed. You can know that if I am trying to do what Hashem says, I don't have to worry about a thing. You don't have to live with that constant fear of Gehenna, punishment. That's not what fear of Hashem means. Fear of Hashem means appreciating the seriousness of it. Appreciating that the relationship is not one that Hashem is going to let go of. You appreciate that, and on the contrary, you're protected. My Rebbe said, the way you have to teach kids Yiras Einish is, you have to teach kids that there's such a thing as punishment for Averis. At the same time, people are busy hitting their kids over the head with, you're not davening well? You know what kind of Gehenna there is? These people drive their children away from Yiddishkeit. When you're raising your children with avoiding Gehenna, the kid is going to mess up sometimes. Oh, what you're going to get for that. You're driving them away from Yiddishkeit. The way to train for Yiras Einish is, give an example, just an example of the way it's supposed to be approached. This is the way we're supposed to approach it with ourselves also. The way you teach children the concept of Yiras Einish is, let's say you say at the Shabbos table or something like that, oy, the punishment for Chilul Shabbos, now real Chilul Shabbos, not the sort of thing that's likely to happen in your house. Nebuch, those people who, you know, when a person knows about Hashem, but he drives on Shabbos, it's Gehenim, Achman al-Itzlan, eating Chazer, Gehenim, Achman al-Itzlan, look how lucky we are that we lead a life where we know that we're not going to have that. Look how lucky we are that we're protected. It's a completely different approach. Yes, there's Gehenim for the for driving on Shabbos, for riding on Shabbos, for eating cheeseburgers. And Hashem told us everything that we need to do. Look, we're Baruch Hashem, we're from. Hashem told us everything that we need to do in order to avoid it. You thank Hashem for that. This is something that will ultimately develop. This is Yiras Einish. You're making the child aware that there is punishment. But yet, we know that we're protected because Hashem provided us with the means of protecting ourselves. Yes, the punishment is there to make sure that we don't step out of the house in a dangerous way. But we're in the house, we're protected. That's really the purpose of it. Now the truth is that this is a subject that needs to be developed a little bit further. But our time is running out. So we're going to stop here, and at some point in the future, probably not next week, we will do another vote on the subject for you.